Hello and welcome to Iris for Sunday, August 15th, 2020. Your reader today is Trevor Brass, and I'm pleased to bring you the Sioux City Journal. Let's take a quick look at our weather for the next 5 days. Today, it'll be breezy in the morning with clouds and sun. Winds will be from the south-southeast at 8 to 16 miles per hour. We're looking at a high of 85 degrees today. Tonight it'll be clear to partly cloudy with a low of 62. Again, winds about 7 to 14 miles per hour. Monday it'll be mostly sunny, breezy, and pleasant with a high of 85 and a low of 64. Tuesday it'll be partly sunny, breezy, and humid with winds from the south at 10 to 20 miles per hour, high of 88, low of 65. Wednesday things get a little more climatic and mixed up with a strong afternoon thunderstorm possible, high of 88, low of 65. And Thursday, a strong thunderstorm possible again, also high of 85 and a low of 63. So it looks like we have fairly pleasant weather except for the end of that, where we might get some thunderstorms later this week. But enjoy the nice weather for now. All right, let's turn to the front page of today's paper, where we'll look to the mini editorial at the bottom, which is written by the Journal Editorial Board. And they write, "It's nice to see the city crews out resurfacing streets. It should make for a smooth coast to the first day of school." From the Journal Editorial Board. And onto that story, as the new school year begins, headline, "Help Wanted, Bus Drivers." And the top subject, "Drivers Needed as School Year Approaches." Subheadline, "Schools Try Various Method to Find Qualified Applicants." From Sioux City. The search for bus drivers has been challenging for school districts this year, department heads say, and some are still searching as the first day of school approaches. All summer, various school districts advertise with yard signs, park buses, and banners. South Sioux City's busing provider, First Student, hosted days for people to drive a bus, hoping to encourage more applicants. Both Sioux City and Lamar struggled to find bus drivers this year. Both transportation directors said this is an ongoing challenge and has been for many years. The Sioux City Community School District had a successful summer recruiting more drivers, said Tim Paul, Director of Operations and Maintenance. With normal routes, special routes, and substitutes, the school has more than 60 drivers. Paul said it is still looking for 6 drivers. Paul said the school will not have to change any routes for the upcoming year because of the shortage. Many of the additional positions would be for substitutes when there are vacations and illnesses. In Lamar's, Transportation Director Cody Kellen said he is looking for one more driver for a couple hours a day. For the first time last year, the school hung a banner on a bus by the baseball field. Last year it worked well, and Kellen said this year it encouraged one person to apply. He advertised all summer and finally found 2 new drivers at the end of July. Lamar's will also not make any changes to routes. South Sioux City and Homer Community School Districts both contract with First Student for transportation services. Both are currently still hiring for bus drivers. To be a bus driver in Sioux City, South Sioux City, Lamar's, and Homer, all of the training and testing for a CDL endorsement is done after hiring. "It's getting harder and harder to find bus drivers," Kellen said. "This has been an ongoing problem across the nation and has been getting worse every year," he said. The COVID-19 pandemic did have a slight impact on finding drivers. Paul said many of the drivers are senior citizens or individuals who have retired and many be concerned about the impact of COVID-19. Some already employed drivers also decided to not return due to health concerns, Paul said. For Sioux City, the district has the additional challenge of hiring bus assistants. "It is often an overlooked position and can be challenging to find people," Paul said. He said the school is always hiring for the position. South Sioux City is also advertising open positions for bus assistants. School starts for many Northwest Iowa schools on August 31st. Despite the shortage, Paul said he feels good about the upcoming year, and with people taking retirement throughout the year, some of the positions will fill as the year progresses. In 2020, school officials said it was not practical to limit the number of students on each bus to meet the recommended social distancing practices. As a result, many districts required masks on buses. The list included a number of smaller school districts that were not mandating facial coverings while students were in the classrooms. Due to legislation signed by Governor Kim Reynolds in May, Iowa schools cannot put a mask mandate in place this school year. In South Sioux City, the district follows a ranking system from low risk to severe risk for COVID-19 precautions. Face coverings are required for staff and students in the moderate to high-risk categories. The Dakota Valley Community School District follows a similar plan, with green, yellow, orange, and red phases. In the orange and red phases, masks are required on transportation. So that's the story, the update with busing in the local school districts. Alrighty, let's now turn to the next state news, where we go to the front page of today's Sioux City Journal. Headline, COVID-19 surge has state officials worried. From Des Moines, the Journal Des Moines Bureau. With cases and hospitalizations spiking once again, despite the availability of a vaccine, Iowa is experiencing its third significant surge of the 18-month COVID-19 pandemic. The virus's latest trajectory has public health officials across the state expressing grave concern and a little bit of exasperation. Quote, I'm extremely concerned about what's happening right now, said Dr. Pamod Dewaldi, director of the Linn County Public Health Department. Here's what's happening right now. COVID-19 cases are surging. The rolling two-week average of daily new cases is 7 times higher than it was roughly 6 weeks ago, and at its highest since late February, according to the most recent state data. COVID-related hospitalizations are also increasing exponentially, 5 times higher than roughly 6 weeks ago, and the highest since roughly late January and early February, according to the state data. Just over the past week, the rate of new cases increased 30% and hospitalizations 46%, according to data from the weekly White House report on the pandemic. Quote, we are definitely concerned by the increase in positive cases in Scott County. Our case counts and positivity rates are mirroring where we were last August, said Brooke Barnes, deputy director of the Scott County Health Department. Public health officials statewide said there are two major drivers of the current COVID-19 surge. The virus's Delta variant, which spreads from person to person more easily than the original virus, and people who have not received one of the COVID-19 vaccines. Just more than 59% of Iowans ages 12 years and older, those eligible to receive for the free COVID-19 vaccines, are vaccinated, according to federal data. This is a virtual match to the national average. Public health experts say that generally 70% is the public vaccination benchmark to curtail the spread of a virus like COVID-19. And public health leaders across Iowa said getting more Iowans vaccinated is the best way to stop the current surge in cases and hospitalizations and the pandemic in general. Demand for the COVID-19 vaccine in Iowa has waned in recent weeks to the point where the state has discarded more than 81,000 unused doses of the vaccine, the state public health department told the Des Moines Register. The department previously warned it may have to discard roughly 217,000 doses by the end of August. Quote, we have a miracle called vaccine. Why are we squandering that opportunity? Quote, Duvaldi asked. We are not only jeopardizing our health, but the health of our loved ones and neighbors and everyone we interact with. In Woodbury County, just 40.7% of the total population is vaccinated, lagging the statewide rate of 47.6%. That concerns Kevin Green, director of Siouxland Public Health. Quote, we consider that about 2 out of every 3 Woodbury County residents are not vaccinated. The level of protection that is realized is much lower, which allows the virus to spread, Green said. The surging number of COVID-related hospitalizations has renewed concerns over Iowa's healthcare system, which was pushed to the brink during the pandemic's winter surge. Blank Children's Hospital has again suspended elective surgeries. The vast majority of new hospital admissions are people who are not vaccinated. Quote, we are in regular communication with our area hospitals. Whenever we have seen increases in positive cases, they have subsequently seen increases in hospitalizations. And that is the case recently, Barnes said. Quote, we all share concerns with the increases in case counts and what that could mean for our community in the upcoming week. In Polk County, hospitalizations have increased 300% over the past month, said Nola Angier Davis, public health communications officer with the Polk County Health Department. Quote, when we don't curtail the latest surge, we see increases in cases, increases in hospitalizations, and then increases in deaths. It's that pattern that we have seen throughout this pandemic, Davis said. With the Delta variant surging and vaccination rates falling short, the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is now recommending all people, even those who are vaccinated, wear face masks indoors in public areas where transmission of the virus is substantial or high. And Iowa, that includes all but 5 counties, according to the latest federal data. Public health officials say wearing a face covering can help even among vaccinated individuals because it is still possible for them to carry and spread the virus. The vaccine's effectiveness is preventing any traction from resulting in severe illness or worse, experts say. Quote, we know people are upset by having to wear masks again. Please know this isn't long term. This is something for right now, not forever, Davis said. And we do this to keep our community healthy, and we're doing this to keep our community safe. With the pandemic not only dragging on, but surging once more, a year and a half after its start and roughly 8 months since the vaccines became available, DeWaldy sounds befuddled. Earlier this week, DeWaldy was giving his periodic report on the pandemic to the Linn County Board of Supervisors when he said anti-vaccine and anti-mask protesters in attendance started yelling at him. Quote, I don't know, man, DeWaldy said. This is a really crazy time that we live in. All right, let's now turn to the State, Nation, World section on page 8-2. Headline, Iowa's Storyteller Awaits Fate of Funding. Subheadline, Silos and Smokestacks Needs Vote by September 30th. From the Journal Des Moines Bureau. While congressional action on the $1.2 trillion infrastructure package and another $3.5 trillion for Democrats' social and climate change priorities is getting major attention, a federally supported program telling the story of Iowa's agricultural heritage is hoping Congress acts on a much smaller appropriation. Silos and Smokestacks, a national heritage area with more than 100 partner organizations, is waiting on reauthorization of its funding before the federal fiscal year ends on September 30th. Quote, we understand it's not like we're the significant large number program that needs to rise to the top of everyone's concern, but it is significant in the impact it makes, said Kara Miller, Silos and Smokestacks Executive Director. Silos and Smokestacks, which is affiliated with the National Park Service, expects about $700,000 in federal funds, which it must match dollar for dollar. An economic analysis of the Silos and Smokestacks found it generates $309 million a year in economic activity across the 37-county area it serves. Miller calls Silos and Smokestacks, quote, a real driver of tourism in the area, with more than 100 affiliates bring about 3 million visitors a year to attractions ranging from Hawkeye Buffalo Farm near Fredericksburg, where visitors can hand-feed bison, to larger venues such as the Dubuque's Mississippi River Museum and the National Czech and Slovak Museum and Library in Cedar Rapids. The mission of Silos and Smokestacks is to tell the story of Iowa's heritage through six themes: the fertile land, farmers and families, the changing farm, the science and technology of farming, agribusiness, and politics and policies. For some venues, affiliation with Silos and Smokestacks is about more than money. The organization has never been a huge funding source for us, but agriculture is not a huge part of what we do, said Jim Miller, vice president of marketing for the National Czech and Slovak Museum. Quote, but we value that partnership. The museum received a small grant to help pay for an agricultural intern and another for a technology upgrade during the pandemic, said Miller, who is no relation to Kara Miller of Silos and Smokestacks. In addition to the funds, he said, the partnership with the other Silos and Smokestacks organizations benefits all the affiliates. Quote, we certainly hope that it continues to whatever level, whether it's $1,000 or $10,000, Jim Miller said. Kara Miller isn't aware of any opposition to reauthorizing Silos and Smokestacks funding. The last reauthorization was in 2013, and Congress at that time acted much earlier in the budget process, she said. Quote, we're just very anxious about getting it done. It's getting very close, she said, about the September 30th deadline. If Silos and Smokestacks is not reauthorized, it cannot receive any federal money. So for Silos and Smokestacks, it's more a matter of timing than opposition to reauthorization. U.S. Representatives Ashley Hinson, a Republican, and Cindy Axne, a Democrat, whose districts cover much of Iowa's National Heritage Area, are supportive. GOP U.S. Senator Joni Ernst also supported Silos and Smokestacks when she met with its representatives at a Benton County stop recently. Reauthorization, quote, has a huge impact on us, Kara Miller said, not just at the headquarters, but for 115 partner sites. Quote, we partner with museums and farms and history centers and any of those places that have a significant ag story, she said. We provide them with technical assistance, we provide them with training, we provide them with volunteer training. Quote, a lot of these places are totally volunteer run, so they really do rely on us for all sorts of information resources that they don't have the expertise to manage. That includes marketing and promotion of individual sites, as well as tourism in the entire heritage area. All right, we will now turn to page A9, The Week in Iowa. It's a recap of news across the state from the past 7 days. headline, Parents Call for End to Mask Ban. A social media-led grassroots group of Iowa parents took their pandemic complaints to the Iowa Capitol to call for Governor Kim Reynolds to give school districts relief from a new state law that prohibits schools from enacting face mask requirements when there is no such requirement from the state government. The Safe at School sit-in was held on a scorching sunny morning on the Iowa Capitol grounds and attended by roughly 100 supporters. The event was hosted by five Iowa mothers and is a product of a movement that started out with a social media post. Vaccines tossed. Iowa has tossed out tens of thousands of expired COVID-19 vaccine doses and could toss out hundreds of thousands more if demand for the vaccine continues to lag in the state, health officials there said. Derecho insurance. Insurance companies have paid more than $3.1 billion to settle 223,410 damage claims from last destructive derecho, according to the state's insurance division. That number is expected to grow. State regulators urge insurance carriers to grant extensions. Clean energy. Iowa's clean energy workforce shrunk by 9.7% in 2020, but still has more than 28,900 jobs, representing almost 2% of the state's civilian labor force, according to the Clean Jobs Midwest report from Clean Energy Trust and Environmental Business Group E2. Play ball at Field of Dreams. More than three decades after Field of Dreams seeped into the country's cultural consciousness, with a one-year delay caused by the pandemic, one of the most famous cornfields in Hollywood history finally gets the opportunity to host real Major League Baseball. The proud and quintessential Midwestern state hosted a Major League Baseball game for the first time when the White Sox and Yankees played at a temporary venue built for about 8,000 fans in Dyersville. Attorney General lawsuit. A group of animal rights and public interest groups filed a lawsuit challenging the latest Iowa law designed to criminalize investigations into animal treatment on livestock farms. The lawsuit, filed in federal court, alleges violations of First Amendment free speech rights. Infrastructure funding. A proposal that would send more than $4.2 billion in federal funding to Iowa for road and bridge construction and repairs received a split vote from the state's Republican U.S. senators. Chuck Grassley voted for and Joni Ernst against the $1.1 trillion infrastructure bill. Teaching drivers. The number of Iowa parents taking steps to teach their children how to drive skyrocketed more than 900% in the first month that a law allowing them to replace certified instructors took effect. However, that is only about 2% of the intermediate licenses issued to new drivers annually. Odds and ends. Prison murder. Avoiding a murder trial, an Anamosa State Penitentiary inmate admitted Friday to bludgeoning correctional officer Robert McFarland and prison nurse Lorena Schulte with a hammer during a failed prison escape last spring. State Fair. Early indications are that the Iowa State Fair is headed for a full rebound after last year's rare cancellation due to the COVID-19 pandemic. An official said advance ticket sales were selling well for this year's event. Drought conditions. Ongoing drought conditions in parts of Iowa continue to raise concerns as the state's corn and soybean. The water cooler. Political rally. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz, two Republican U.S. House members and fervent supporters of former President Donald Trump, plan a rally Thursday, August 19th in Des Moines at a location to be announced. Transportation plan. The state's transportation department will hear public comments on the draft of its statewide transportation improvement program from 2 to 2:30 p.m. August 17th. The call-in number is 515-817-6093. All right. We will now turn to the opinion section where we'll do the letters to the editor and the editorial. Let's do the letter to the editor. Looks like we only just got one today. This one comes from Barb Wheelock of Ames, Iowa. And Barb writes, her letter is titled, State Fails Iowans. And she writes, Governor Reynolds once again brings national attention to our state. CBS Evening News profiled a family of six in Keokuk, Iowa. Both husband and wife were forced to quit their jobs because she developed severe asthma, pulmonary edema, and an autoimmune disorder, which did not allow her to have the vaccine, and her husband couldn't risk infecting her. Governor Reynolds chose to cut off federally funded pandemic unemployment benefits, even though we are still in the midst of a pandemic. As CBS News reported, the whites had a lifeline. Iowa cut it. Without mask mandates and so many people who are refusing to get vaccinated, it's unsafe for people like her to be out in public spaces. She talked about her family is losing everything they work for instead of herself and her husband, quote, we're failing. No, Aaron, you are not failing. Governor Reynolds and the state of Iowa are failing you. Again, signed, Barb Wheelock, Ames, Iowa. Headline from the Journal Editorial Board. The census results come through for Siouxland. Journal Editorial Board. Tri-state leaders probably crossed their fingers earlier this week awaiting the 2020 census figures. Would numbers be down because the survey had been done during a pandemic? Did residents move away because they weren't happy with the political climate? Was availability of adequate housing a contributing factor? Thursday, the good news emerged. Most major metro areas' communities grew. North Sioux City increased by 20%, Sergeant Bluff went up 19%, South Sioux City grew by 5%, and Sioux City edged near 4%. Sioux City officials say their numbers could be even higher and may challenge the count. Growth? Question mark. We've got it, which counts on many levels. With more people, we get more representation in government. When leaders move those lines for legislative districts, we shouldn't see our influence diminish. Further, federal funds for a number of things, from hospital emergency services to roads and schools, should increase. Even more interesting, our diversity is growing. In Sioux City, the diversity index rating increased in the past decade by 17 points. The largest jump was in Pacific Islander representations, a whopping 528% increase. All this says the region is growing, diversifying, and gaining clout. Business leaders have done a good job attracting workers to the region. Quality of life options have increased, and as the pandemic pointed out, we may be the beneficiary of those wanting to work from home in a place that in a place that isn't congested. Now, the real challenge is to use the results in a way that will benefit all. Recognizing our population and serving all sectors should be the goal of elected officials. If we're more diverse, they should reflect that change in the decisions they make. They shouldn't move lines just to protect the few. They should consider the needs of all and act accordingly. Residents who responded to the census survey, thank you. You can see those 5 or 10 minutes it took to complete the form brought positive results. You responded, you counted, you matter. All right, well, I guess we're kind of out of the hard news, so I will now switch to sports section, section B. All right, let's now, in the sports section, let's turn to professional baseball, our local minor league team, the Sioux City Explorers. Headline, X's drop opener against Claiborne from Sioux City. The Sioux City Explorers saw the Claiborne Railroaders score twice in the 9th inning on Friday as the X's fell in an important series opener 7-6. Early on, the Claiborne offense raced out to a lead as Ramon Hernandez and DJ Peterson singled in the first, made it 2-0 in favor of the Railroaders. A throwing error in the second inning allowed a third run to score, and back-to-back two-out singles from Osvaldo Martinez and Hernandez gave Claiborne a 5-0 lead. Sioux City finally got the bats working in the fourth when Jose Sermo clobbered a 2-run home run. He was followed a few batters later by Seamus Curran, who hit a solo homer to make it 5-3. Lane Milligan scored on a ground out after reaching on a double to cut the Railroaders' lead down to just 1, 5-4. The Explorers took the lead in the fifth after Sebastian Zawada tied the game with a base hit. With bases loaded and 2 out, Claiborne booted a ground ball for an error that gave Sioux City a 6-5 lead. The X's held that lead until the 9th, thanks to 2 scoreless innings of relief from Max Coons. In the 9th, Claiborne began the rally with a 1-out single from L.A. Lego. After a single from Osvaldo Martinez, it was Hernandez who delivered his 3rd RBI of the night with a line drive to left, tying the game at 6. On a throw to the infield, Sioux City booted the ball onto shallow left, allowing Martinez to advance from second base and score, as the throw to home was mishandled, giving Claiborne the 7-6 lead on the air. And Claiborne took the lead. After Claiborne took the lead, there was a 22-minute delay due to a power outage in the surrounding area. Nate Grecken took the loss for Sioux City as he tossed 2/3 of an inning, allowing 2 runs on 3 hits with a pair of walks. Austin Fairchild got the win in relief as he tossed a scoreless inning with a run and a walk. Edward Cruz picked up his seventh save of the year with his scoreless ninth as he worked around a one-out walk with three strikeouts. Next sports story, amateur golf. Headline, Milligan at top of city leaderboard. There's a distinct Morningside University presence among the leaders in the 108th Rick Collins Toyota Men's City Golf Championship. Former Mustang Zan Milligan shot a 4-under par 68 in the opening round at Green Valley Saturday and has a one-shot lead over Ray Sennenbaugh, who opened with 69. Sam Story, a current Morningside standout from Surrey, England, fired a 70 while Johnny Douglas, another ex-Morningsider, posted a 71. Douglas is tied with past men's city champion Colin Mitchell, while Robbie Newswick also carded 1-under 71 in near-perfect scoring conditions. Owen Gross and Doug Louch each matched par with 72, making it 8 players to shoot par or lower in the first round. Milligan hails from Hexham, England, and was a standout for the Mustangs through last season. He is not listed on the current roster, nor is Douglas, another native of England, from Newton Castle upon Tyne, who has contended in a number of area events in the past. Not to be counted out are Tyler Denk, Brian Evans, and Josh Wendling, who each shot 1 over 73. The entire field plays another 18 holes Sunday, with top third of the championship fight marking the cut for a final 9. The cutoff for the championship flight was 76, and 23 players got in with that number on Saturday. Mitchell won the 2018 Men's City Championship. Cameron Farrell, the 2018 champion, made the cut for championship flight on the number with 76. Corey Mathsey won his 4th city crown last year, but has decided to turn professional. Therefore, a new name, or possibly a familiar one, will be added to the historic past list of champions on Sunday. Sennenbaugh is a veteran Sioux City Linkster who calls Green Valley his home course. He played in the final grouping at the Rivercade last month, tying for third behind Matney and Mitchell. Sam Prue sets the pace in the senior division at 1 under 71. Prue has a one-shot lead over Bill Mathers and 3 over Tom Yaniff. Jeff Donaldson, Lance Hemisoff, and Scott Knowles each shot 75. Prue, who won the Interstate Amateur in June, is the points leader in the Player of the Year race. Next, we'll switch to Dakota Valley football. Headline, Everything's on the Table. Subheadline, Panthers to play with all new starters from North Sioux City. It's not uncommon for a football coach to tinker with a team from season to season. Dakota Valley High School coach Jeff Van Den Hol has been busy with tinkering his roster throughout the summer. The Panthers, who went 6-4 in 2020, returned just one starter from last season. That starter is offensive lineman Evan Van Skok, a 6'2", 240-pound senior. Don't let that fool you. Dakota Valley has players coming back who played during the 10-game season, but they just didn't start on the first snap offensively and defensively. Van Den Hol hasn't panicked about having just one starter among the 22 offensive and defensive positions, including all 11 positions on defense. He's learned throughout his coaching career to adapt. Quote, I don't think you can get into wholesale changes because you want the kids to come onto the season with some familiarity, and that puts you into a better situation. Also, if you're not making wholesale changes every year, Van Den Hol said, so our kids came into the summer and they're able to learn and pick up fast because it's a lot of the same things that we were doing the previous year. You each fix what you want to fix, but you leave the main parts all intact. Even though the Panthers will send out 11 new starters on defense when the Panthers take the Tri-Valley on Tri-Valley on August 27th, there are some impact players who return. For example, senior J.J. Mayer has 7 total tackles, 5 unassisted and 2 assisted as a Panthers defensive end. Panthers outside linebacker Ben Stokesbury, defensive end Mason Albanasis, and defensive end Charlie DeAugusti all recorded 3 unassisted tackles. Albanas also had a tackle for loss and a sack. Stokesbury also picked off a pass. Connor Meltas also had a tackle for loss and a sack as a sophomore lineman. Then in the secondary, there's junior Randy Rosenquist, who intercepted a pass and recorded even 7 solo tackles on the season. Vandenhul hopes Rosenquist can have a breakout season, starting some momentum for what could be an impactful junior year on the gridiron and basketball court. Cole, he's just one of those cases that things come easy to him, the Panthers coach said. I shouldn't say they come easy to him because he worked hard at it, but he makes things look easy because he's always in the right spot and he's always doing the right thing and he just needs a playmaker. In all, the Panthers defense allowed an average of 184 rushing yards per game while opponents got 125 passing yards per game. The Panthers allowed 25.1 PPG last season, and that included allowing 40 points in 3 games. Even though the defense had its faults, Vandenhul thought it did 2 things well, tackling and forcing turnovers. The Panthers did all that with a new defensive coordinator. Lee Macklem changed roles with the Panthers. He was once a position coach, but was promoted to defensive coordinator last season. He returned in his second season handling the defense, and Vandenhul has seen a good rapport between Macklem and the student athletes. Well, I think it's just a familiarity all around, between him being less familiar with being a defensive coordinator and learning the ins and outs, Vandenhul said. It's a big adjustment coming up from a coach position to taking over a whole half of a football game. And all of his assistant coaches on the defensive side were new last year, so it was a steep learning curve for him last year. He did a good job with it. Vandenhul hopes the defense can put together more takeaways and continue to be good tacklers going into 2021. Van Skolk has had the discussion with Vandenhul about having to play different positions on the offensive line. Vandenhul trusts that Van Skolk can move form side to side and even from guard to tackle or even center. Other linemen, however, will have to learn one spot first before having the potential to be shuffled around like a Van Skolk. Quote, we have certain kids that we give them one position to learn, and the reason we do that with a Van Skolk and move them around a little is because he's going to be a returning starter, Vandenhul said. Quote, so he's already comfortable one spot, so it's pretty easy to move him if needed. But we usually try to take the kid and we put them at one position on the offensive line, and we don't move them too much because they are all different. Those big boys will be assigned to protect quarterbacks Brodny Ballinger and Ethan Enema. Enema made 2 competitions for 86 yards. Vandenhul hasn't announced who will be the quarterback. One of the key factors Vandenhul will look for between the two is leadership. Quote, everything's on the table, Vandenhul said. When you have to fill this many positions, you don't take anything off the table because you don't want to limit yourself. They're all good athletes and they're all good football players, but it's who can make the play. Who are the kids going to look to when the chips are down? Sometimes it has more to do with the off the football stuff and the intangibles than it does about playing the game of football. All right, now let's turn to the college football. Next story at the front page of the sports section for today, Sunday. Headline, Ferentz optimistic on Iowa's vaccination rate. From Iowa City. By the time the Iowa football season kicks off in September, Coach Kirk Ferentz believes his team's COVID vaccination rate will have improved considerably. Ferentz said Friday at the Hawkeyes preseason media day that the number of players vaccinated for the coronavirus has grown steadily since he indicated last month at the Big Ten kickoff that Iowa's team vaccination rate stood at around 70%. Quote, that number has gone up, Ferentz said. We continue to educate. That's our number one priority, to educate our players what the protocols are going to be and just what we feel is probably in their best interests. The Iowa coach, who has been vaccinated, repeated that he will not mandate that his players be vaccinated, but he will continue to educate. Quote, when September rolls around, we expect to be in a pretty good position, but it remains our players' choice what they choose to do, Ferentz said, encouraging fans to educate themselves about what the vaccination can do. Ferentz said coaches have stressed to players that their individual choices can impact the entire team. Vaccinated players are currently not subject to contact tracing, which Ferentz said was at the root of multiple issues Iowa had within its team a year ago. Quote, what is different for us is that we're all involved with the team activity, Ferentz said. Whether you are a coach or a player, you only get limited opportunities. Players' windows are a lot smaller. Pretty precious time to give it up for something that is likely avoidable. That's a tough deal. Back to work. A week into fall camp, Quarterback Spencer Petras, welcome to return to the normal preseason routine. Quote, especially after last year and how weird camp was, it's such a great feeling to be out there as part of a normal camp and putting the work in, Petras said. Quote, I'm excited to be back at camp. The junior quarterback has welcomed blending a number of newcomers into the mix as Iowa works towards a noon scrimmage Saturday that will be open to the public free of charge. Quote, it's been a great opportunity for offense, and it's been great for those guys coming in, Petras said. Quote, it's been good for them to come in and compete right away. It's a lot of work, but it's been fun. Iowa running back Tyler Goodson expects more of himself as a junior. The Hawkeyes' rushing leader the past 2 years, who was named the Big Ten Running Back of the Year in 2020, sees room for growth in his game. Quote, when I watch tape, there are a lot of things I can do better in that part of the work. It is never finished, Goodson said. There are a lot of little ways to improve, and getting those little things down, that's what I need to get done. Significant start. Iowa's first two opponents, Indiana and Iowa State, are ranked in the top 15 in the preseason coaches poll, something Ferentz said creates a sense of urgency during fall camp. Quote, they're both really good teams, and the margin for error is always tight. We traditionally have not always been as sharp early, or at least where we need to be. Last year is a good example of that, Ferentz said, referring to the Hawkeyes' 0-2 start before winning its final six games. Quote, it's a good reminder for all of us that we don't have time to waste. Not every day is going to be perfect, but we need to be working hard. It's been business as usual for Iowa's kicking unit. A pair of six-year seniors, kicker Caleb Shudak and long snapper Austin Spywalk, are joined by holder Ryan Gersond, a fifth-year senior, on one of the most veteran segments of the Hawkeye team. Quote, it's pretty unusual to have that much experience coming back, Shudak said, but it's something that can really help us out. We have to be close to being the most experienced part of the team. We've all been around forever. Trading places. Freshman Griffin Little of Bettendorf has already made a move. Listed as a defensive lineman in Iowa's preseason roster, Little is now working with the offensive lineman of fall camp. Player council named. Iowa announced its 16-player council for the 2021 season on Friday, a group of six seniors and 10 juniors who will assist in formulating policies and team decisions. Seniors Matt Hankins, Ivory Kelly Martin, Jack Kroner, Kyler Schott, Caleb Shudak, and Zach Van Valkenburg were named to the group. They were joined by juniors Dane Belton, Seth Benson, Jack Campbell, Joe Evans, Tyler Goodson, Sam Laporta, Tyler Linderbaum, Kevin Merriweather, Spencer Petras, and Tyrone Tracy Jr. Iowa officials announced Friday that around 5,000 seats remain for the Hawkeye September 4th season opener against Indiana. That number reflects an increase in the season ticket sales at this point compared to the 2019 season and a sellout of Iowa's student season ticket allotment of 8,200. All right, that's all the local sports stories that I could find. So let's switch to the business section, page B7 of this today's Sunday Sioux City Journal. Headline, most Nebraska employers not ready to mandate COVID vaccines. From the Omaha World Herald, some require masks, recommend vaccination. From Omaha. Tyson Foods made waves early this month with its implementing requirement that all 120,000 of its employees must be vaccinated against COVID-19. Springdale, Arkansas-based Tyson, which employs about 10,300 people in Nebraska, joined the likes of Microsoft, Disney, Google, and United Airlines in mandating vaccinations. But other companies operating in the Omaha area haven't adopted that policy yet. Some of Omaha's largest employers, including Union Pacific Railroad, First National Bank of Omaha, and Mutual of Omaha, confirmed to the World Herald last week that those companies don't have any vaccine requirements in place for their workers. But some Omaha area businesses do require masks for all employees, or at least those who have not been vaccinated. Quote, I've not found any private sector firms that are requiring vaccinations, but they're all encouraging it, said David Brown, president and CEO of the Greater Omaha Chamber of Commerce. Holly Salmi, vice president of public affairs and policy for the Nebraska Chamber of Commerce and Industry, echoed that, saying that the organization isn't aware of any other companies in the state with the same vaccination requirements as Tyson. That could change in as soon as a few weeks. R.J. Stevenson, an attorney with Baird Home, LLP in Omaha, said he's had discussions with some employers, particularly in the healthcare industry, who wish to require their employees to get vaccinated, but are holding off at least until the Food and Drug Administration fully approves the COVID-19 vaccines. That could come as soon as next month for the Pfizer vaccine. While full approval by the FDA does not necessarily add legal heft, Stevenson said it would give companies more confidence in requiring employees to be vaccinated because the vaccines will have been more fully vetted. Stevenson believes that between that and other companies mandating vaccinations, the dominoes will be, quote, starting to fall. When employers see other employers requiring it, they will feel comfortable about requiring it as well, he said. He added that there's a risk in a company pulling the trigger too early. If other companies don't follow suit, the company could see part of its workforce leave for employers who aren't requiring vaccinations. Quote, most employers would not be able to operate if they lost 25% of their workforce, or perhaps even 5 or 10%, Stevenson said. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the chief medical advisor to President Joe Biden, recommended Friday that businesses and colleges consider requiring people to get vaccinated against COVID-19 in light of the surge of U.S. cases driven by the Delta variant. Fauci said that he opposed a federal vaccine mandate, but that the velocity of the COVID-19 spread should spur private organizations to think about requiring shots. Quote, I would encourage private enterprises to seriously consider the idea of mandating vaccination in the enterprise for which they are responsible, whether that's a university or a place of business, he said in an interview with Bloomberg QuickTake. With the Delta variant driving about 90,000 new COVID-19 diagnoses a day in the United States, companies are increasingly making immunization a prerequisite for working on-site or patronizing businesses. On Friday, United Airlines became the first major U.S. airline to require workers to be vaccinated. The public hotel in New York will mandate that guests and staff be inoculated, and soon New York City diners and the theater patrons will have to show proof of vaccination. Fauci said more companies should consider similar rules. We need to do whatever we can, he said. I know people don't like mandates for them to do things that they feel encroach upon their individual liberty, but in fact, when you're in a public health crisis, sometimes you've got to look out for the good of the community as well as your own personal libertarian views. Jennifer Turco-Meyer, an attorney who specializes in employee rights at Dyer Law in Omaha, said employers mostly likely can, in the absence of legislation or court ruling, require COVID-19 vaccinations as long as they don't violate a contract or an employee's stated religious objection or disability claim. Quote, this is certainly a developing issue in the law that employment attorneys are watching very closely because it is changing day by day, week by week, she wrote in an email. Turning through the business section, the business brief headline, Northwestern nursing grads get 100% board pass rate for second year, from Roane City, Iowa. For the second year in a row, Northwestern College's latest nursing graduates have recorded a 100% first-time pass rate on the NCLEX registered nurse board exam. All 14 of the 2021 nursing alumni who took the exam passed it on their first attempt, according to a press release from Northwestern. Northwestern's 2021 nursing graduates have been hired by the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, the University of Iowa Hospital in Iowa City, Mercy One Medical Center and Unity Point Health in Des Moines, St. David's Medical Center in Austin, Texas, Orange City Area Health Systems, and Spencer, Iowa Hospital, among others. The alumni are working in medical, surgical, ICU, neuro, trauma ICU, pediatric cardiology, oncology, and telemedicine units. Northwestern's nursing program has been ranked among the nation's top 20% by nursingschoolsalmanac.com. All right, and let's now turn to the living section, or section D of today's paper. We often don't get to read from there for lack of time, but this week we do. Headline, Westside takes pride in Agape Community Garden. Michelle Bakke said she knew in her heart that if she planted a community garden on a piece of land across the street from our church on Sioux City's west side, people in the neighborhood would gather up the tomatoes, peppers, rhubarb, kale, mint, and more springing forth from the earth to nourish their bodies. The gate is never locked at Agape Community Garden, where all are welcome. Agape is about selfless giving, selfless love that you just do out of the goodness of your heart, Bakke said as she sat at a picnic table in the middle of the garden. As white butterflies fluttered over a patch of nearby black-eyed Susans. Quote, it's all throughout the Bible. Bakke, a member of the Mount Zion Missionary Baptist Church, founded the community garden in March of 2018 on an empty, overgrown piece of the church's property at West 15th and Silver Streets. The concept for the garden took root while Baki was studying human services and counseling at Wayne State College. Quote, for my internship, I was trying to start a nonprofit or do something for underserved communities. I wanted to forge a relationship between the senior generation and the younger ones so we could do things together, she explained. In my research, it said community gardens promote neighborhood awareness. I thought it would enhance the neighborhood and actually help the people that live in it. Over the past 3 years, Baki said the garden has flourished with the help of community members, donations from various businesses, and partnerships formed with numerous agencies and groups, including the Northwest Iowa Group of the Sierra Club, Les Hills Chapter of Wild Ones, Sioux City NAACP, Iowa State University Extension, Woodbury County. After cleaning up the lot, Baki, her sister, and a friend tried their best to level off the uneven ground by hand. Luckily, her neighbor came to the rescue with a bobcat machine. She borrowed a tiller from another church member and posted a request for other gardening tools and supplies on a swap site. The first year, Lowe's, Fleet Farm, and Baumgars helped us by donating all the plants, said Baki, who filled up the flatbed and interior of a pickup truck with plants for the garden. Everything I've done is just by collaborating, reaching out to different organizations. Although Baki grew up on a farm outside of Hornick, Iowa, she said she doesn't have a green thumb. Quote, there was no rhyme or reason behind the flowers that she initially opted to plant, other than that they were pretty. The garden continued to transform. Apple, pear, cherry, and peach trees were planted. Vegetable plants came in. Compost bins were built. Benches were donated. Quote, the first year was just trial and error, said Baki, who described the garden's inaugural yield as, quote, amazing. For the most part, we're trying to do things that are sustainable, things that will come back year after year. Baki partnered with the Northwest Iowa Group of Sierra Club and learned about pollination native plants. Nearly one-third of the garden is dedicated to wildlife, habitat enrichment. More than 100 native plants, almost entirely sourced from or donated by Les Hills Wild Ones, as well as 7 species of native shrubs, have been established. These native plants provide food sources for beneficial insects and also support songbirds and other wildlife. In 2019, 8 family-focused nature activities were hosted by Sierra Club members at the garden. Baki's brother built a lending library, which further cemented the garden as a social destination for people residing in the neighborhood. The garden also features wood chip walking paths, shade structures, as well as educational and inspirational signage. Quote, it's super. More people need to come. It's a great community activity, said Bob Morrissey, a member of the Sierra Club. This summer, a small shed was erected. A man donated a drip line and installed it in the vegetable garden. A children's corner began taking shape, and herbs were relocated to colorful tubs. A shed and gazebo will also be added. Baki said the garden is about so much more than growing vegetables, flowers, and herbs. She said it's a place that restores hope. A woman who was struggling with health problems spotted a sign in the garden that says, "Don't give up," while passing by on her way home. Baki said the woman, who was ready to give up on life, stopped to visit the garden and found a sense of renewed strength. While working in the garden, Baki said neighbors will often flash a smile and wave and say, quote, "Thank you, sister." Quote, I think they're just happy to be proud of something in the neighborhood, and it's theirs. It has nothing to do with me, she said. I just do the work. The rest is an act of God. All right, let's now switch to Dear Abby. Bakeries, food safety issues have former worker worried. Dear Abby, a year ago I was working at a small wholesale bakery with maybe 15 employees. While I was there, the place was overrun with food safety issues, including mice, allergens, cross-contact issues, and poor employee hygiene practices. At the time, the owner was working on fixing some of the problems, but not fast enough for my taste. Although he was never my favorite person, he was clearly overwhelmed with running a business and didn't have the resources to fix the problems. Now that I have been gone for some time, I'm on the fence about whether I should leave an online review or comment detailing some of the problems. I don't want to hurt a struggling business, and it's possible these problems have been fixed, but there's no way for me to know for sure because I'm no longer there. Personally, I think customers should know about these issues before purchasing their products, but I don't want to stick my nose where it shouldn't go. Even if I leave a review anonymously, there's always a chance they will find out. Advice? Signed, possible whistleblower. Dear whistleblower, I agree customers of that bakery should know that there are possible problems. Rather than leave an anonymous review, contact the health department in your city and report the conditions you observed. It should trigger an inspection of the place. Your personal feelings about the owner have nothing to do with this. The cross-contamination you described could trigger a possibly fatal allergic reaction. and the vermin infestation and poor hygiene practices of the employees could cause someone to become seriously ill. Dear Abby, my 53rd high school class reunion is coming up. Former classmates have been emailing me about participating. I do not want to go. I went to my 50th and that was enough catching up for me. I like hearing about the lives of my former classmates from our class correspondent, but 50 years ago I moved more than 1,000 miles away and began a new life. So did my parents and siblings. Today my parents are gone and my siblings and I are spread throughout the country. There is nothing left in my hometown for me other than the graves of my father's family, our old family home, and memories. Is there something wrong with me because I'd rather spend time with my friends in my present city and travel the remaining places on my bucket list? Should I be ashamed of my attitude, or am I, quote, normal? Signed, Feeling Guilty in Texas. Dear Feeling, it is normal and healthy to want to concentrate on the present rather than keep revisiting the past. I see nothing shameful for about it, nothing to feel guilty for. You attended your 50th and touched base with your old classmates. It was a blessing to be able to do that. If, however, the trip down memory lane and the number of classmates no longer on this side of the sod depressed you, skip future reunions. Concentrate on the future and do it without beating yourself up. All right, let's do the horoscopes. Monday, August 16th. Focus on what you can accomplish this year and put your muscles to work for you. A physical display will make an impact. You can learn plenty if you are mindful of what worked well for you in the past. Make home and family your priorities and talk with loved ones about your long-term plans. Leo, take a pass if you don't feel passionate about someone's proposal. Trust in your ability to do your own thing and improve your life. Don't stop until you are satisfied with what you achieve. Virgo, emotional matters will escalate if you don't keep your opinions to yourself. Patience will be necessary, and keeping busy will help you avoid an altercation. Think matters through. Libra, look for options. Don't settle for less than what you want. An exciting opportunity will come your way when you least expect it. Focus on what makes you happy. Romance is favored. Scorpio, avoid any drama going on around you. Concentrate on something you feel passionate about and work alone if possible. Tidy up loose ends and refuse to let your emotions interfere. Sagittarius, say less and listen more. Mull over matters before you share your intentions. Protect what you have and be secretive about your plans. Beware interference by manipulative individuals. Capricorn, gather information and you'll discover something that interests you. Bring about changes at home that will improve relationships with loved ones. Think outside the box. Aquarius, don't let uncertainty be your downfall. Allow your intuition to guide you when it comes to financial and health matters. A partnership will not turn out as planned. Be careful whom you trust. Pisces, you'll get an earful from someone who is critical or doesn't understand what you're trying to achieve. Have patience, but don't give up too much. Move forward on your own. Aries, don't be fooled by what you hear. Take the time to follow information back to its original source and question its validity before revealing your opinion. Update your appearance and pursue romance. Taurus, emotional spending will not ease stress or make you happy. Put your wallet away and focus on gathering facts that will help you decide how best to use your skills. Keep up with current trends. Gemini, take a pass if someone tries to start an argument. The less you say and the more you do, the better off you'll be. Focus on what's important and keep moving forward. Finally, Cancer. Look for a unique way to get things done on time. Switching things up a bit to suit your current situation will encourage you to be productive. Stay focused regardless of what others do or say. All right, that brings us to the end of reading the Sioux City Journal for Sunday, August 15th, 2021. Let's just do a quick recap of the weather before we say goodbye. All right, again, today it'll be breezy this morning, clouds and sun, high of 85, low of 62, tonight clear to partly cloudy. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, breezy, and pleasant, high of 85, low of 64. Tuesday, partly sunny, breezy, and humid, high of 88, low of 65. Wednesday is when things get a little stormy, a strong thunderstorm in the afternoon is possible, high of 88, low of 65. And Thursday, a strong afternoon thunderstorm is also possible, high of 87, low of 63. Again, your reader has been Trevor, and I hope you all have a wonderful week. Until next time, goodbye.